This is called The Pod Remains the Same.
Welcome to The Pod Remains the Same, a Led Zeppelin podcast. Join us for a journey through the recording history of one of the greatest bands of all time as we revisit the Led Zeppelin catalog, album by album. This is The Pod Remains the Same with Chris Karam and Brad Page. Episode 16, Celebration Day.
Welcome to The Pod Remains the Same, a Led Zeppelin podcast. I'm Chris Karam.
And I'm Brad Page.
And today we're going to talk about the various, there's not many of them, the various Led Zeppelin reunions that have taken place since the mid-80s till 2007. There's only been a few, really, to varying degrees of success. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, when Led Zeppelin broke up in 1980, even though they issued a press release saying that, you know, we're done, we're not going to do it without John Bonham, rumors still continue to, you know, be prevalent that, you know, Led Zeppelin would regroup at some point. They'd get a new drummer, Cozy Powell, maybe, or whoever the other hot drummer was. Yeah. Remember how Brad, even though, like, you know, the guys had kind of moved on, Page did solo stuff, but we still would hear periodic rumors of Led Zeppelin.
You still do today. Sometimes you'll hear things. People just don't want to let their favorite bands go. It's like the Beatles, you know, were those guys all still alive today? Would still be hearing rumors about that.
Oh yeah, definitely. And of course, you know, by 1985, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant had both embarked on solo careers to, you know, varying degrees. Robert Plant was on his third solo album by this point, Shaken and Stirred. And Jimmy had just come out with his first album with The Firm with Paul Rodgers, and that was doing pretty well.
Yeah.
But then, of course, a thing happened on July 13th, 1985, called Live Aid, which, you know, you remember, Brad, was this big benefit concert to benefit Africa and, you know, starving people. All of the major groups were getting together on in England and in America to do these two simultaneous concerts, you know, to benefit it. And it was huge. You know, USA for Africa had a big hit single, We Are the World. It inspired some knockoffs like Hearing Aid and the song Stars. And, you know, it was just Bob Geldof, of course, from the Boomtown Rats was the guy who organized the concert. And, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit for getting this thing off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it was really unprecedented. And I still think today there's been attempts to do things like that, but I don't think there's anything that's really ever reached the height of when you talk about the stars of the day. You know, you had major acts of the day, plus you had all these classic legacy acts getting back together. It was a one-of-a-kind event that I don't think you could. And today, you know, music is so fragmented today. I don't think you could do something that would have that kind of impact. There's certainly artists like Taylor Swift that are huge, but I don't think that you could put together a roster like that that would be as impressive today as that felt back when that event happened. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's an unrepeatable event.
No, I agree with you. I think it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. They tried duplicating it 20 years later with Live 8, but it wasn't quite the same. It did okay.
Right. It had its moments, but you're right. It was not. It's hard to, from today's perspective, really put into words what it was like, the impact that event had. I mean, it was literally, I mean, it was broadcast live on TV, you know, it was like the moon landing or something. You know what I mean? It was that kind of cultural impact.
I was working that day during the day and I listened and I heard it on the radio. It was being also simulcast on the radio. And of course, you know, one of the highlights was the reunion of the original Black Sabbath, because at that point, Black Sabbath was kind of, you know, up in the air. Wasn't sure what was going to happen with them. And then, you know, of course, that sparked rumors of a reunion with Ozzy, which didn't quite happen. At least not then, anyway. But then as the day progressed, we began to hear that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant were gonna perform together, which was, like, really exciting. Well, by the time the evening rolled around, it went from being Jimmy Page and Robert Plant to Led Zeppelin, because apparently John Paul Jones showed up unannounced and said, hey, guys, remember me? I'm, you know, the bass player. And it was interesting because they had Tony Thompson from Chic and the Power Station playing drums. They had Robert Plant's bass player, Paul Martinez, on bass, obviously. And Phil Collins was going to do this. He did it. He was performing over in England, you know, at the English Live Aid show. Yep. He hopped a Concorde, I think it was a Concorde, and came over to JFK, and he played the American show with Led Zeppelin. You know, they had a dual drummer, and there's something that interesting that came out of that. We'll get into that as we talk about it. But then, 8 o'clock, and I think at this point, I think ABC or one of the networks had actually picked up the primetime segment of it. And the highlight was going to be, I think Led Zeppelin went on around 8 or 9 o'clock that night. I remember watching it at a friend's house, and we were very, really excited to see Led Zeppelin back together, you know. And then the show started, And let's just say that my heart sank a little bit. Robert Plant was on an off night from his tour for Shaken and Stirred. His voice was a little worn. Jimmy was out of tune.
Yeah.
And the thing wasn't quite in sync. I don't know what your thoughts on that were, Brad.
I agree completely. It wasn't a complete fall on your face disaster, but you had a day's worth of events where, again, you had acts that were big at the time, particularly on the UK side of it. Style Council, Ultravox, you had all those bands that were the new hot and upcoming bands. And then you had these legacy acts, one after another, from George Thorogood to, and when I say legacy, I mean, they were still, they weren't as legacy then as they were now, but they were not new and upcoming. You know what I mean? They were established acts. And of course you had Queen that really set the precedent for the day, for being a band that maybe at least in America had been kind of out of sight, out of mind a little bit. They hadn't been touring in the States. But you kind of had one after another of these landmark performances, for example, George Thorogood, again, like he brought up great blues guitar player, Albert Collins, to play with him. And so almost everybody's set had some guest or something special about it. It was just one special event after another. So, man, the expectation was so high for Led Zeppelin. They could have used another week's worth of rehearsal.
Yeah, I think they basically,
how it feels.
I don't think they had very much rehearsal at all, as I understand it. I think they basically just got there, rehearsed, and did it, or very, And the thing is, you got to remember at this point, it had been almost nearly five years since, John Bonham had died in the breakup. So the expectations for this were off the charts. I mean, Led Zeppelin, people really wanted to see Led Zeppelin get back together. And, Plant had established himself pretty well as a solo artist. He was doing very well, had his own band, and he wasn't really, he wasn't even doing any Led Zeppelin material at that point.
Right. And Jimmy wasn't either. Right. So they were really rusty on the material.
Yeah.
In recent, revised history, I guess, a lot of crap has been piled on Phil Collins.
Yeah.
I do think it was probably a mistake to do that. But you can't shoulder all the blame on him. Like you said, Jimmy was kind of out of tune. He was not prepared. Robert was in the middle of a tour. He blew his voice out. He did, he did not sound good. He couldn't hit a lot of those notes. So though, I think if you watch it, you would say, not great, not horrible, but not great. But I think, in light of everything else that happened that day, I mean, tell me what you think, but I think they really walked away as kind of being the biggest disappointment of the whole two show festival.
Yeah, I would say so, because like I said, there was so much anticipation and so much expectations. Let's face it, Led Zeppelin had achieved legendary status by that point.
Right.
And that was the same year that the Hammer of the Gods book came out. So there's a lot of tension being focused on them again. Mm-hmm. And, they were still on, AOR radio or classic rock radio. And yeah, oh yeah. I mean, as soon as you heard them, like you're like, oh boy, this is, you know, this is gonna be rough going.
Right, yeah, right from the get go, it was rough at best, and it didn't get any better. You know, there were other moments of the show that of the concert that were issues. I mean, I remember being a big Paul McCartney fan. He came out to do Let It Be and his mic didn't work for like the first half of the song.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, you know, which was hugely disappointing. But he wasn't bad, at least. Just you couldn't hear him sing. But definitely Zeppelin did not live up to the hype. And you know, I mean, of course the hype wasn't all on them. But it was a disappointment. As a fan, I don't think you could do anything but feel disappointed in it, because you want them to be great. You know, you wanted them to get back together and do what Queen did, which was just knock it out of the park.
Yeah, I think if you talk to most people, they would say that Queen was undisputedly the act that stole the show from both counts. You know, yeah. Freddie just and Freddie, you know, Freddie was in command. Freddie, you know, held that audience in the palm of his hand. And whereas Zeppelin, you know, they were, like you said, they were rusty. They were kind of getting together on an off day. And boy, was it an off day. And, you know, of course, they're given like a prime slot, like a prime time slot. I think it was 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. And it was going to be on network television, not just MTV or whoever else was broadcasting it.
Yeah, I think another thing people have to remember is like where Queen was at that point, when they came out with the Hot Space album a couple of years before, that really flopped in America.
Yeah.
And they did that one tour. That was the last tour they did in America. And, you know, they came out with that video when they were all in drag, which, you know, you'd think we were there now.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know what I mean? But there was just this uproar of you know, in England, drag was no big deal. It was Monty Python, right? But it did not fly in the state. So Queen was on a low in America. They were like on their way down. And so they weren't given like a prime spot on American TV or anything like that, you know.
Right.
And expectations, you know, they were still huge in England and Europe, but they were seen as has-beens or out of fashion or whatever in the States. They weren't really having hits or anything. But yeah, they came out and they just showed everyone. They gave the finger. it just like I said, knocked it out of the park. Incredible. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, expectations were just high that, well, Zeppelin, you know, they're Zeppelin. Of course they're going to be great. And it was just a really off night, off whatever for them. But I think it stung, and I think and they knew it, you know. I don't think they were under any illusions that they were great at that show.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, but on the other hand, you know, it's still to a certain degree at the time was very exciting. Being a huge, we were both huge Zeppelin fans. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that they were going to do that show was exciting enough. And, you know, like you said, it's not a total train wreck. You know, it's not like you have to turn it off after a couple of minutes. I mean, I rewatched the whole thing. But yeah, it's not up to snuff, especially when you consider how great they had been, you know, a decade earlier or in the early 70s when they were in their prime live. Right.
I mean, even like the Nebworth show that we talked about in the previous episode, you know, which was really not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, how great they were then. And they just don't, you know, pull it off, which is unfortunate. But there was. They made that aborted attempt at that reunion with Chester Thompson, right?
What happened was, you know, of course, I'm sure after that Live Aid, rumors were probably going around that Led Zeppelin was going to get back together.
Yeah.
And we didn't really hear anything for a long time. And they kept it quiet for quite a few years. But there was what they call the secret reunion in early 1986 in England with Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, and Tony Thompson.
Right.
And they did have some rehearsals. I remember I didn't hear about it until 1988 when Plant was promoting Now and Zen. He talked about it for the first time in a Rolling Stone interview. And the impression I got, especially from the way Plant related the story, I don't think Robert Plant's heart was ever really in that reunion.
I've read different things that he was actually initially maybe the one to sort of propose it or to get it started. But then, yeah, I've also read that I think it was John Paul Jones said that he didn't really have his heart in it. And Jimmy was about to go on the road to support the second Firm album. That album had come out. So he had commitments. So they had like a week or something, 2 weeks maybe, where they got together in some out of the way place, kind of rehearsed in secret. It just kind of fell apart. I read that Tony Thompson had a car accident.
Yeah, and that was the thing that really killed it.
Yeah.
I guess there was like, you know, Page was having, you know, equipment problems. His guitars wouldn't stay in tune or the amps weren't working right. Yeah. And at one point, Plant just said, you know what? I'm out of here. I can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah.
And I really do believe his heart was not in it. But it would have been interesting to see what would have happened had that reunion taken flight and if they had gotten back together and maybe done a record together or done a tour. But, you know, Robert Plant, I think, was fully invested in his solo career at that point.
Yeah.
You know? And the interesting thing, you know, Jimmy Page, like you said, he was getting ready to do the second Firm tour, which I saw them on that tour, which was pretty good. Interesting little side note about the Firm that came about in recent years was that the reason why the band was formed was because Paul Rodgers was really worried about Jimmy Page. He thought Jimmy was going to overdose or that he wasn't going to make it. So he wanted to kind of get him back on the road, get him back in the game, so to speak. So the Firm was only intended to be, you know, one or two albums at best. It wasn't supposed to be like a career for those guys, but it definitely accomplished its goal. It got Jimmy back out there. And I think that was around the time he straightened up or finally got himself cleaned up from heroin. So, you know, those records were pretty good. I mean, you know, at least it got him back in the game, so to speak. Although, like we've said many times on the show, Jimmy Page's post Led Zeppelin career has kind of fallen short of what we would have hoped.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those records have some moments, but I'm not a huge fan of the Firm records. I wanted to like them, but.
Well, of course you did. I mean, we all did. I mean, and yeah. I enjoy them, but they're not, you know, that it's not like Zeppelin. They're not hitting, or Bad Company for that matter, but at least. But it got Jimmy back in the game. And, you know, I think it's contributed to him eventually straightening himself up and getting, although, you know, what he's done since then, you know, has been really kind of sporadic and spotty. And
yeah, I mean, it got him in the game for those two records and then he kind of promptly disappeared again. So it didn't stick. But yeah, so Live Aid, you know, it's a moment in history, fascinating moment in history, really, because you know, it was a time when all these people were still alive.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and still young enough to do it. No one was gray and, you know, hobbling on stage like they would if they, you know, you tried to do it now. They may have been elder statesmen in rock, but, you know, in retrospect, you know, they were what, in their late 30s, 40s, you know, nobody was, we're older than most of those guys, those quote unquote old timers were at the time the concert happened. So again, it's not something you couldn't do it today.
Right.
A lot of those, you know, people have since passed and whatever. From David Crosby and, you know, a lot of them. But it's, you know, it's a fascinating, it's an incredible just concert as a whole. And it's a fascinating point in Led Zeppelin history, what could have been.
Right. And it's telling that when Live Aid eventually came out on DVD in the mid 2000s, Led Zeppelin would not allow their performance to be included.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to imagine that the people who were packaging that or producing it were like, oh, come on, they're probably probably counting on Led Zeppelin to think that would sell more copies. I think it did pretty well anyway, but yeah, no, Led Zeppelin, you know, knew better. They just knew this was not going to, you know, embellish their legacy, not in the way they would have liked anyway.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, that it was not horrible. A little embarrassing maybe, but certainly did not embellish their legacy, did not add anything to their legacy, which is unfortunate.
Right. Well, we jump ahead a couple of years to May 14th, 1988, and in New York City at Madison Square Garden, a Atlantic Records 40th anniversary concert is being held. And of course, Atlantic Records was Led Zeppelin's record label.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, when you're, you know, the great Ahmet Erdogan calls you, you have to heed the call. So Page Plant and Jones got together, and significantly for the first time with Jason Bonham, who was very young at the time. I think he was like 20, 21 years old.
Yeah.
And Jason Bonham, but he'd been playing professionally for quite a while at that point. He had played with a group called Virginia Wolf that I actually saw live when they opened for The Firm, and he'd had a couple of other groups. Mm-hmm. So he was seasoned enough that he could play, and he, you know, he learned at the foot of the master. So they did the, you know, Atlantic Records 40th anniversary concert. I don't think it's better than Live Aid, but it's still not 100%
really. See, now I couldn't bring myself to rewatch it. As we've done this series of podcasts, you know, I've dug deep into all the records all over again. I've watched the movies. But that one, I couldn't really bring myself to do it, because my memory of it was that it was terrible and that it was worse than Live Aid. So that's interesting that you felt it was better than Live Aid.
Not by much, though. It's not like I think it's a home run. I think it's slightly better. I think it's a little... But, you know, it's still...
I remember Jimmy being particularly not good. But
yeah, Jimmy was not outstanding in this. I mean, this is interesting, like, because for Live Aid, they were only on for about 20 minutes or so. Yeah. This was a little bit longer, though. This, by Zeppelin standards, it was like a warm-up act. It was, you know, I think they were on for like 35 minutes or something like that. And, you know, Jason, on the other hand, I think Jason did a really good job. He was, he knew the material. He played it well. He honored his father's memory. And, you know, obviously, you know, it kind of pointed him in a career direction. You know, yeah, I wouldn't say it's like infinitely better than Live Aid. It's still kind of like a little dodgy, but, you know, it's, on the other hand, the drumming thing is a little more cohesive because you don't have two drummers, and one of whom is probably not very well rehearsed at all, which would have been Phil Collins, although I don't blame him for the whole, you know, thing like Jimmy does. But yeah, it was okay. I mean, not a home run. And, you know, you're watching, you kind of go, well, you know, they tried, they gave it the best shot. But, you know, like, but again, it was an event because, you know, once again, Led Zeppelin was not together at that point. In fact, that year, both Page and Plant released solo albums, Jimmy releasing his first one, Outrider, which was kind of a spotty affair at best.
Forgettable.
Yeah, it's a couple of decent songs, but I don't think it had a lot of direction. But yeah, I mean, it's Led Zeppelin getting back together, and it was something. And it was, you know, there was a lot of big name acts that night. So they were, you know, they were there.
Yeah, again, ultimately a disappointment, regardless of how you rank it. I don't think anybody looked at that and felt it was great. Again, felt that it embellished their legacy in any way. So things were, I mean, boy, kind of two iffy at best reunions. Not great.
No,
not great for the fans.
There was actually one other reunion, although it's, you know, not really like considered a big event. It was kind of an informal reunion where Jason Bonham got married, I think, in 1990, 1991. And they were all there, and they did play live for the people there. But I don't think it was documented in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, not too many people talk about it, so I don't know if it was any better or worse. So I don't have anything to say about that, but I just figured it was worth
mentioning. And again, like, what are your expectations? Everyone's drunk at a wedding and they get up to jam. I mean, you know, it's not like you're on stage in front of a worldwide audience, broadcasts live around the world.
Oh, man.
And you kind of futz it, you know, this is. So it was rough. You know, the Zeppelin reunions were, at that point, you know, as a fan, you'd kind of almost cringe if you know, maybe you kind of feel like, well, maybe they're better off not doing anything together anymore.
Yeah.
If that's what we're going to get.
Right. Well, obviously the 90s come. We do get Page and Plant together again for a few years, which we talked about in previous episodes. We don't really
know. Yeah, which I think was a rousing success.
Yeah. They still had some chemistry. It's just, you know, maybe they needed to step out of the shadow of Led Zeppelin and have some freedom and not feel that weight of that, you know, the impact of that legacy on them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. they clearly came into that with a fresh vision,
yeah,
and ideas, and were able to compromise and come out with something that, at least in terms of the unleaded stuff, was really good. We talked about the Clarksdale album, and that's kind of a disappointment,
right?
But at least it was fresh, you know.
Yeah, this was some new music.
Yeah.
Well, then we jump ahead to 2007. In 2006, I believe, Ahmet Erdogan, who was the founder of Atlantic Records, had passed away. Obviously, a very influential record man, you know, started one of the biggest labels in history, gave a lot of people a big break. And so they were a tribute concert in England was organized for him at the Q2 Arena in London on December 10th, 2007. And the highlight of this would be a Led Zeppelin reunion. Once again, it would be Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, and Jason Bonham. So they did this show. Boy, you want to talk about night and day, what a difference this was over the previous reunions.
Oh, my God. They sound like a real band.
Well, you know, the thing was, I didn't have very high expectations, you know, based on the previous and the fact that it was so many years later. I mean, this was 27 years after the breakup.
Well, let's face it. Since the end of Led Zeppelin, Robert changed to the entire way he sings.
Yes.
All his solo albums don't sound anything like his Zeppelin vocal performances. And then you hear him do those two reunions and he's struggling.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's only getting older by the time the O2 concerts come around. So that was my thing, is like, oh my God, is he going to be able to do it? Is he going to be able to pull off these songs? And you know what? He does.
Well, one thing they did, I think, to accommodate that is the first thing you notice when you hear the opening song, Good Times, Bad Times, is that they tune down a half step.
Oh, well, sure, but everybody does that now.
Right, that's typical. Aging vocal, that's typical for any aging vocalist in a heritage rock band. You have to, because, you know, your voice drops over time. It's age and disparagement, and that's just, you know, that's
what happens. Yeah, and it's not like they're, like, you know, three octaves lower. No. You know, the songs still sound like the songs, you know.
Well, you know, that's the thing too, like they had a lot of rehearsal for this. They rehearsed for 6 weeks, and so they you know, and I remember watching YouTube videos of this shortly after it happened, and I'm like, okay, don't expect too much. And I'm like, wow, I couldn't believe how tight they were. Even in, you know, crappy YouTube clips, they had that power again, that intensity. Everybody's game was their A game. You know, nobody was under the weather. Nobody was, you know, they just really gave it all for Ahmet. And you wouldn't expect it. But now here's a question I have regarding this performance. Okay, this happened in 2007. Mm-hmm. The Blu-ray live CD, live double album, whatever, didn't come out until 5 years later. Why the hell did it take 5 years for this to come out, have an official release?
Good question. I'm sure there was some punch-ins and, you know, embellishments done in this.
I don't think there were very much, though, from what I read. I think it was very minimal.
Yeah, how would you know, really?
Well, that's true.
I don't know that you'll ever really know, but it doesn't feel like egregiously tweaked and manipulated and overdubbed and whatnot. But you know, I do feel that there is something, it's maybe a little sterile. I don't know how else to put it. But compared to the other reunions, it is just miles above the other two reunions that we've already talked about. And I think they felt like they had something to prove, that they couldn't, three strikes and you're out.
Yeah.
You know, they could not fall down again. So they put the work in. You know, I have read some things that, you know, where the Robert was really in control and that he had some dictates, like, you know, we're not going to do 30-minute songs and we're not going to extend, you know, have endless meandering jamming. Instead, that he made sure everything was tight and as concise as you could get it for Led Zeppelin. Which kind of probably put Jimmy in a little bit of a straitjacket. And I think you can kind of feel a little bit of, maybe over rehearsed for Led Zeppelin. I don't know. But listen, I'll take that. I'll take Celebration Day over Live Aid and the Atlantic Reunion any day. There's nothing to be ashamed of on Celebration Day for sure.
No, they definitely were back in the zone, you know, and they really were focused and tight. You know, maybe a bit sterile compared to like the 70s, where it's a little more looser, a little more improvisation. But on the other hand, you know, we've had our 30-minute Dazed and Confused. You know, I'm good. I think the version on this was like 10 or 12 minutes, which is fine. Jimmy had enough, you know, time to do his little violin bow thing and, you know, show off. And I don't think everybody committed themselves very well to this. You know, John Paul Jones, of course, again, the secret. Now, here's the thing about John Paul Jones. When you look at him, Jimmy, by this point, had let his hair go white. He wasn't dyeing his hair. Plant wasn't. John Paul Jones, on it. Does that guy age? Seriously, he does not look old. Yeah, he's the same age as those guys, probably a little older, but he does not look old. He looked great. I mean, he was in his glory. You know, he was doing his keyboards and bass and, again, the secret weapon. But I think by this point, I think everybody by this point knew about John Paul Jones and could acknowledge his contributions. I mean,
yeah,
and, you know, it was just great to see them together again, so tight and such. And you know, Jason did really well.
Yeah.
Well, of course, once that concert happened, rumors, you know, were generated all over the place about a Led Zeppelin reunion tour. Mm-hmm. You know, this being, you know, a lot of people have to imagine this was going to be a springboard for something bigger and better. Of course, it didn't happen, and we know why it didn't happen. There was one main reason. The reason why no full-time Led Zeppelin reunion has never happened, Robert Plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was okay to do that one show, but he went back to his solo career. In fact, in 2008, did an album called Raising Sand with Alison Krauss, which did quite well, actually, you know, for that.
Yeah, I think that played a big, big part in it. If he had done a solo album that maybe had flopped or just flew under the radar, I'm not saying he would have done the Zeppelin reunion, but I think the fact that, you know, he's always been a guy who, like many artists, want to be known for what they're doing now, that, you know, what I'm into now is important to me. And, you know, I want to be acknowledged for that stuff. I don't want to be trapped in my own past. And I think the fact that that record got like universally great reviews, it was selling, was just fuel in the fire of like, why do I want to go backwards?
Right.
They could have made millions.
Gazillions. Trillion.
It would have been one of the biggest tours in history, money-making wise.
And the interesting thing was that even though Plant didn't want to, apparently Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones did.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, to that end, supposedly they stuck together for a while with Jason Bonham and decided to audition other singers. Some names like Miles Kennedy from Alter Bridge, supposedly. Yep. One that I heard who supposedly auditioned was Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. What I've heard about the Steven Tyler thing, and I think Steven Tyler might have even said it, he really wasn't seriously auditioning for Led Zeppelin. He just wanted to go and jam with those guys. He just wanted to be able to say, you know, who knows? But then again, the way things were going.
I mean, if they had said, okay, Steven, do you think he would have said no?
Probably not.
I mean, they, you know, both he and Joe love Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. And let's say Aerosmith by this point, I mean, Aerosmith has always been dysfunctional, but they were hitting a real downward spiral at this point with relapses, and Tyler was getting ready to do American Idol and he was getting kind of distracted. And, you know, Aerosmith at this point hadn't done an album in several years and they were just kind of, you know, touring off the old hits. So, yeah, you're right. What's he going to do? Say no, Joe, I got some bad news to tell you. They said yes. But from what I understood, they weren't going to call it Led Zeppelin had they continued, which would have been a smart move on their part because you can't do Led Zeppelin without Robert Plant. But it never took. They apparently couldn't find the right singer, or just, you know, didn't gel for whatever reason.
It, you know, hard to say. I I would have treated it with an open mind, but I think it's almost a no-win situation.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's going to compare it to Led Zeppelin. So I can see why they would be very trepidatious about moving forward with that without Robert.
Yeah. And besides, after all these years, after all these reunions that were kind of half-baked and didn't really work, you finally have the one that really works. It's tight, it's focused, it's universal. People really enjoyed it. More people would have enjoyed it a few years later when it came out on Blu-ray and CD. So why not end your career as Led Zeppelin on a high note? Just let that be your and that appears to be it's going to be their last stand, although, one could say that really their last stand was in 1980 with John Bonham, but this was, it's not that Jimmy would have loved to have gotten Led Zeppelin back together. He for years wanted that to happen, but Led Zeppelin went out on a high note. It was interesting when this came out, it was kind of timed to the fact that they were being honored, the Kennedy Center honors, and they all came to America and were, watching these various groups, artists kind of cover their material to varying degrees of success. But it was kind of a nice little, way to kind of honor their career. And, Led Zeppelin went out on a high note. I mean, who would have thought it after, Live Aid and the Atlantic Records thing?
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I was nervous about it. I didn't have, I wanted it to be great, but I can't say I had high expectations for it. But you're right. They went out on a high note, and I think you have to respect them for pulling the plug,
Yeah.
and because it's so easy to go for the cash, and we see bands do it all the time.
Yeah, I mean the Kiss farewell tour that just will never
Right.
end.
Right. And I love The Who, one of my favorite bands of all time. But they still go back out on the road. And I think a lot of it is because one of them needs money. I know certainly when Entwistle was around, he was a big spender.
Yeah. Yeah,
And
he spent like a rock star, but he wasn't earning like a rock star.
right. And he would kind of have beg and plead and, all right, okay, we'll go out again. And I don't think Pete was probably always the most resistant one to do it, but he would do it. But, law of diminishing returns. And these guys never did that. They
No.
never ever did that. They did those couple of reunions, as weak as they may have been, but that was it. And until the Celebration Day thing, and then really, I truly believe that's it.
Yeah, I
I
think
don't
so at
think
this
we'll
point.
see certainly nothing under the banner of Led Zeppelin again. May they show up on each other's records or do some tracks together or something. It's always possible. We might see another Page Plant thing. Who knows? But I don't think we'll ever see something billed as Led Zeppelin. And I don't
No,
think
and
we
it's
will ever see a tour. Never,
no,
ever,
not
ever.
at this point. No, it's too, I think it's too late for that. Although they could still command big fees. It would be, you wouldn't be probably, you could probably couldn't even afford to buy a soda at one of those shows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, if they went to tomorrow and said we're doing a one-off show at this O2 arena again or wherever the hell, I mean, it would sell out in 5 minutes.
Oh yeah.
At like $1,000 a ticket, and it would
Oh
still
yeah.
sell out in 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, exactly. And with that, we have a little bit of an announcement to make that this is the quote unquote final episode of The Pod Remains the Same. It was our intention from the very beginning to have this be kind of a limited series or a finite series where we mainly focused on the records. We did a few couple of side topics, but for the most part, we wanted to really focus on the music and the songs. And I gotta say, it's been a hell of a ride, Brad.
It has. And, this was really your baby, and I thank you for inviting me to be a part of it. One of the great thrills of doing this was just rediscovering the music. We didn't just come here and talk off the top of our heads. We dug back into the catalog and we listened, we did research. And, I don't want people to think that we came on here as know-it-alls. you know, we both of us, I think, learned more about this incredible band as we did the show. And that's part of why I wanted to do it, is because, you know, you can, there's just always something to discover, particularly with a band like Led Zeppelin that was so creative and its catalog is so rich that when you dive back into it, you just discover new things. So I hope the people listening, you know, discovered new things about this band they didn't know. I know I certainly did. Again, I didn't come into this being the Led Zeppelin expert. I had to do my research, and I'm glad I did. It was fun. I loved every minute of it, re-listening to those records and doing the research and, you know, watching the movies and videos again. And just, you know, just a reminder of just what an incredible band they were and what an amazing catalog of music it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like you say, it's, you know, oh, gee, I've got to listen to some Led Zeppelin or watch some videos to research.
Yeah, what a chore.
Oh, well, I suppose. And it's, you know, all these years later, I mean, I discovered Led Zeppelin in the late 70s. The music still holds up for me. You know, it still bears scrutiny. And listen to this music, you know, like you said, I discovered things that I didn't know or had forgotten about and enjoyed the process of kind of rediscovering this band and trying to kind of come up with some, you know, talking points. And I'm, you know, mm-hmm. I couldn't have asked for a better partner in crime for this, Brad, because you not only brought your A game, you know, you always astound me, like how you can say Jimmy played his Gibson, you know, his Gibson SG on this track, or you knew the keyboard that Jonesy was playing.
Well, again, that's the research. I didn't know this stuff ahead of time. I don't want people to think that, you know, I just know, you know what I mean? I just I dive in and I, cause it's fascinating. These things are fascinating. You know, how this music came to be. It didn't just appear out of thin air.
No,
these four geniuses in their own way created this stuff out of their imaginations and the tools they had, which were pretty primitive compared to the tools we have today.
Yeah, but you know, I think though, you compare it though production wise to some of the stuff they've today, it's no contest. The Led Zeppelin stuff, you know, Jimmy did not allow himself to be hamstrung by technological limitations. If anything, he probably challenged his engineers and his, you know, whoever worked with him to, okay, do this. And even if it couldn't be done, they found a way to get it done. I mean, they were some of the biggest and best engineers. I mean, Eddie Kramer, Andy Johns, you know, these, among others. And, you know, Jimmy always had a vision for Led Zeppelin. He was always like, they were musical explorers. Now, they'd all been in other bands and had played in other records, you know, prior to Led Zeppelin. Obviously, John Paul Jones and Jimmy Page had both been session musicians. So they were seasoned enough that they were able to just sort of like, okay, we want to do this thing. And like you've said before, Brad, Led Zeppelin was Led Zeppelin from minute one. They didn't have to find their sound. I mean, obviously, they honed it.
They refined it.
They refined it, but like it took them like two or three albums before, like some bands where it takes like two or three albums before they find their sound. Zeppelin had the sound from day one. They just refined it, built upon that, embellished it, and took it. They weren't afraid to experiment musically, to try different rhythms, different chord changes. Obviously, Jimmy is probably the king of alternate guitar tunings.
Yep.
And, you know, they weren't afraid to just do whatever they wanted to do. And they had the artistic freedom is in the contract. They, you know, Zeppelin was all about control. Everything about that, you know, Peter Grant controlled the business end, and he basically set it up so that those guys could just focus on being musicians. They didn't have to worry about anything else that, you know, and obviously it paid off. I mean, each Led Zeppelin album, you know, just advanced the band's cause further. And, you know, there'd be something different on each record. We could go, there's always something, some little detail that catches your ear, whether it's a guitar lick or a percussion figure from John Bonham or John Paul Jones sprinkling some pixie dust, as you always say, or fairy dust on, you know, with his keyboards and his bass. And, you know, Robert Plant, obviously, you know, like lyrically, you know, Robert Plant was kind of interesting lyrically. He could write like some interesting stuff, like that was kind of fantasy based, Lord of the Rings stuff. And then it was just, some of it could just be crude double entendres that, you know, don't really hold up to scrutiny, but who cares?
Right. But, you know, one of the most iconic lead vocalists in rock history. It's, you know, again, I hope people who've followed along with us have rediscovered these songs all over again, like we kind of have, and learn something new, and
yeah.
Maybe songs that you used to skip on the record or didn't pay any attention to, you go back and you listen to it with fresh ears and like, wow, there's just something in every song that's worth acknowledging and revisiting and rediscovering. It's an incredible catalog of music, and not that big a catalog.
No, but
compared to other artists.
No, you're right. But when you consider the depth of it, though, and how they kind of made the most out of each record, mm-hmm. You're not going to say, "Oh, this album sucks," or this. They really, in that 10 years, they really packed a lot of intensity into it, and maybe not a vast catalog. But on the other hand, we also didn't have to listen to later albums where maybe they weren't as good, or maybe there was a downturn in the the musical landscape for the Led Zeppelin. Who knows. But we'll never, right. Obviously we'll never know. But in a way, like, they're just kind of, like you said, they're kind of captured in time. They're just stuck in that time, but it's timeless. And it's just, right. you can't go wrong re-exploring and re-exploring again the music of Led Zeppelin. And if this show got people to do that, then I'm happy. I'm happier, mm-hmm. And while this is, the final episode, so to speak, I don't want to, we're not closing the door completely. I don't see why we can't reconvene every now and then, do a one-off episode if we come up with an interesting topic or some kind
of.
Yeah,
I mean, you mentioned that there's a new Led Zeppelin documentary in the works. So maybe we come back on when that finally sees the light of day. We could talk about that. Jimmy may finally put out a second solo album, and that would be worth talking about. Who knows? Who knows what the future holds? These guys... three of them are still alive and kicking.
Yep.
Let's hope that there's new music from all of them coming that's worth, even if we don't talk about it on the show, let's hope that there's more life left in these guys and we get to hear more, because it's always interesting.
Absolutely. Well, with that, we end this final episode of The Pod Remains the Same. I'm Chris Karam.
And I'm Brad Page.
And we both want to thank you for listening. And if you want to re-listen to the episodes, please re-listen to the episodes, re-listen to the catalog. You won't regret it.
Yes.
Hi, Chris Karam here. Please check out my podcast, Mr. K's Super Show. Every month, a guest co-host and me take a look at music and music-related pop culture and break it down. Nothing is too trivial when it comes to the great music of Generation X. Let's go back to a time when music was fun, dynamic, and worth saving your allowance money for. Mr. K's Super Show can be found on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, and wherever fine podcasts are hosted. Check it out. You may not regret it.
Hey, this is Brad Page from the I'm in Love with That Song podcast. On our show, we discover what goes into making a great song. We explore the history of the artist and the story behind the song to see where it came from. We listen to individual tracks to understand the foundation that a great song is built on, like this drum track from Rush. And we focus on specific performances that are simply magical, like this unforgettable moment by Mary Clayton on this Rolling Stones classic. In the end, we have a better understanding of what makes a song great. This is the I'm in Love with That Song podcast on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
You have been listening to The Pod Remains the Same, a Led Zeppelin podcast. If you like what you just heard, please write a review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever social media you like. On behalf of Brad Page and myself, Chris Karam, thanks for listening to The Pod Remains the Same.